You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, the 9th of October, we're going to spend the last half hour with Sharif Girgis of Princeton University. Talk about two issues. Now, a lot of people are feeling very depressed about what the Supreme Court, well, they didn't do something. They refused to do something. That is, they refused to take up several cases from several states on the issue of same-sex marriage. And everyone has their own guess as to what the court is trying to do and what the court is trying to say. Are they sending a message? The court hardly ever does anything without any purpose. We're trying to figure out what's going on here. What's the lay of the land in terms of the Supreme Court and the issue of same-sex marriage? And the other thing I'd like Sharif's response to is a New York Times column titled "The Church's Gay Obsession." And the author there accuses American Roman Catholics of being hypocritical, of picking and choosing their moralities, and tries to drive a wedge between American Catholics and Pope Francis on the issue of marriage. We'll talk about all that for the last half hour of Issues Etc. Joining us, Sharif Girgis is a PhD candidate in philosophy at Princeton University and a JD candidate at Yale Law School. He is co-author of the book, What is Marriage? Man and Woman, a Defense. Sharif, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm interested to get your take on this. The Supreme Court refused to hear several cases from several states on one issue, that same-sex marriage. What do you think the High Court is trying to do or say with this move?
Well, as you said at the beginning of the segment, it's really impossible to say for sure. My best guess of what happened is that the liberal wing of the court was happy to let these cases just keep trickling in as long as they went their way, and that the conservatives were a little nervous about what Kennedy would do with the decision. So there was, my best guess, as I said, is just that there was uncertainty on the conservative side, so neither the liberals nor the conservatives wanted to take it. Now, you know, that's not going to be tenable for very long because there's a good chance that some of the lower courts are going to go the other way, and it'll be appealed up to the Supreme Court, and we'll see what they do there. One thing that's clear, though, is that everybody on the court wants to avoid a backlash like the one that followed Roe. So a big part of what happens, I think, depends on what people do about it, whether it's overt action by the court or this more kind of passive, under-the-radar action to achieve the same result.
So two issues there. One is Justice Kennedy can kind of hold both sides hostage. I mean, I'm not accusing him of doing that, but with his vote kind of always a question mark when it comes to these things, especially with regard to the conservative wing of the court, they considered the better part of prudence to say, look, this is probably not the right time, as long as we don't know where the swing vote's going to go, to pursue this thing. And then the other issue, it sounds like, is that this court doesn't want to go down in history the same way the Roe court has.
I think that's right. And I think that second thing is the encouraging note in all of this, because certainly if it's true that Kennedy's leaning in favor, then the liberals would have certainly taken the case. They would have wanted to be the moral heroes of the thing. The thing that's stopping all of them, including people like Ginsburg way on the left, is the success of the pro-life movement in really rallying in response to the judicial usurpation of Roe. And that's a lesson that we can continue to learn in the marriage movement no matter what happens with the court.
Is that a lesson for both sides, do you think, Sharif?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, whether it's conservative or liberal policy, if the policy isn't really required by the Constitution, it's a kind of injustice for the court to impose it anyway. I mean, it's really replacing the processes that make this a representative democracy, and that's something that that we shouldn't want to do in either direction.
A couple more questions in that vein. Justice Ginsburg recently made some public comments that some interpreted as crossing the line of what kind of court policy when it comes to speaking out of school, where she simply said she kind of spoke for the court a little bit on the issue of some of these pending cases. Do you think she crossed the line?
I think she certainly towed right up to it if she didn't cross it, and she probably did. I think there, in general, there's a double standard in the in a lot of the coverage. A lot of the people who cover the court for journalism are, for big outlets, are liberals, and so they give it a pass when Justice Ginsburg says something that might slant her decisions, but not when Scalia does, for example. But yeah, I think that was a bad idea.
And then you said they can't put this off forever. Sooner or later, they're going to have to hear a case. It's simply going to be, I mean, this is not leaving the lower courts. It's going to continue to bubble up. If the court remains comprised the way it is right now, to a person, where does it go? What does the court decide?
I think it's actually still hard to say. And the main reason is that Kennedy, who is going to be the swing vote on this issue, really does buy this idea that we don't want the court creating a social backlash, that we want to protect the institution of the court and its respect across the country, right and left. So I think it's just going to depend on the timing and on how Kennedy feels about that by the time comes. And again, that makes a difference for us because it means that, you know, even if we're not directly involved in the litigation or anything like that, whether as communities, as a country overall, we show that there's a vibrant force in favor of marriage that might affect not just Kennedy, but some of the lower court decisions as well.
Will it be the Supreme Court that ultimately decides the issue of same-sex marriage nationwide?
I think if the lower court, any of the lower court decisions come out the other way, and it looks like the one in the Sixth Circuit probably will, then it's certainly going to have a chance to do that. And we can only hope that it backs down and lets the process work itself out.
Let's talk a little bit about a New York Times column that appeared under Frank Bruni's byline called The Church's Gay Obsession earlier this month. And in that article, he accuses American Catholics in particular of being hypocrites on the issue of same-sex marriage. In particular, he kind of just says, I know a lot of Catholics who kind of look the other way on other marriage issues, but they don't want to look the other way on the issue of redefining our same-sex marriage. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I thought the column was incredibly unfair. The title of it was The Church's Gay Obsession, and it shows a kind of lack of self-awareness because it really, the lesson you came away with when you read the column was that a lot of commentators on the church are obsessed with the gay issues, and so they see it popping up everywhere, and they don't see the church speaking out across the range of moral issues that the church cares about. It's part of what's going on is that there are some important differences between the pastoral issues that are raised by a same-sex couple that gets a marriage license, that wants to raise kids together, and, for example, someone who's divorced or divorced and dating or divorced and remarried. I mean, so part of it is the publicity. Everybody can tell without knowing your conscience, without, you know, searching your soul or reading your heart, that if you're in a same-sex relationship, you're standing for a different vision of the human good and of sexuality. A lot of the other cases that he brings up are just things you wouldn't know unless you were the person's confessor. So I think that's part of it. The other part of it is just a kind of blindness in the observer to the consistency of the church's witness on the whole range, just even just within the sexual issues, on the whole range of ways that people can fall short of honoring marriage and the goods of family.
He writes about conscientious supporters of same-sex marriage losing their jobs in Catholic institutions. He doesn't seem to be aware. I'm sure he is, but he didn't write about Brandon Eich losing his job because of a rather small donation he made years ago to Prop 8 in support of that proposition regarding same-sex marriage. Has he kind of failed to track the news here about people losing jobs on both sides?
Yeah, well, it's just, it's a double standard. And, you know, the other thing is that, of course, in that case, Mozilla comes out with a statement after firing Brendan Eich saying, oh, we're just for diversity and inclusion. So they're not even being honest about what they're doing. Whereas the church is absolutely clear and consistent in its moral witness that everybody has profound, inherent, and equal dignity as a child of God, that no matter what your inclinations are, you are a child of God. And at the same time that we have this vision of morality, this vision of the truth about how to live a good life. And if you are publicly opposing it, you cannot teach people what the Catholic vision is. That's the that's the bottom line. It's perfectly rational. It makes a lot more sense than Brendan Eich's firing. Of course, we can list countless cases, not just that extremely prominent example, but a lot of cases where people's businesses are being forced to close down, where legal action is being taken because people don't have the right views, which means the views of Frank Bruni and other New York Times editorialists. So, you know, there are double standards all over the column.
With about a minute here before we take a break, according to his column, what do you think Frank Bruni wants? What does he want the church to do?
You know, it's what a lot of people have always wanted the church to do, and on different issues in different times, which is to shut up. They want the church to silence its voice on all the things they don't understand or agree with, and then keep up on the things that they do, you know, immigrants' rights and the rights of the laborer and so on. But that's just never been, of course, the Great Commission. The Great Commission says, go and teach all things that I have commanded you. And that's what the church does in season and out, whatever the detractors say.
He talks about the church being morally selective. Here's his language, morally selective, bigoted, and very sad. And then he says, will the church ever get away from this obsession with sex? And then he says of Pope Francis, and I want your reaction to this. I'm just going to read and quote his column from the New York Times. Pope Francis seems inclined to do so and is nudging other Catholic leaders with his carefully chosen words and artful orchestrated symbols. He's probably not telegraphing any major shift in the church teaching, which is, by the way, changes plenty over time, but he's signaling that Catholics who run afoul of it needn't be vilified. Has he understood Pope Francis's recent actions when he married about 20 couples, some of whom had in the past been cohabited or had children outside of wedlock?
No, I mean, I think part of what he's having trouble seeing is that the church is the place for sinners, that it's the place where sinners go to find healing, and that mercy and compassion and forgiveness doesn't mean having Frank Bruni's moral opinions. It means standing by the truth that's been handed down by Christ that for that reason cannot change, and receiving and helping people where they are. You know, I'm sure that in the cases of the couples that had been married off, they're coming from all kinds of backgrounds. They have all kinds of sins in their history, just like every one of us, but that they've made a commitment to live by the church's teaching, to rectify their situation, to enter a marriage, and it's perfectly good idea for the church to make that part of its public witness.
Sharif Girgis is our guest. He is a PhD candidate in philosophy at Princeton University and a JD candidate at Yale Law School. He has co-authored the book, What is Marriage? Man and Woman, a Defense. You'll find a link to this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Look for the book, What is Marriage? Man and Woman, a Defense. We'll be right back.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
No matter the size, big or small, RP Lumber can deliver it all. From pickups to one-tons to box trucks and booms. Everywhere you look, you see blue. RP Blue. RP prides itself in customer service. RP will deliver quality products to your home, business, or job site. And you can be sure of timely delivery on clean trucks with courteous drivers. So when you think of service, think blue. RP Blue. With over 50 local community locations, for 37 years, RP Lumber.
Hey, St. Louis. How would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Rysik, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952. Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. 618-670-6952.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about a New York Times column titled The Church's Gay Obsession. Sharif Girgis of Princeton University is our guest. He's co-author of the book What is Marriage? Man and Woman, a Defense. The author of the New York Times column also quoted Lisa Soule Cahill, a professor of theology at Boston College, and this is what she had to say. She said, the bishops have picked up gay marriage ever since the 2004 presidential election as a special cause that they are against. She said that they're staking out a countercultural Catholic identity and that they failed so miserably on the priestly abuse scandals that perhaps they're determined to find some sexual terrain on which they can strike a position of stern rectitude. Is that a right understanding of the bishop's position on same-sex marriage, especially vis-a-vis the priestly abuse scandal?
You know, the striking thing about that comment and about the column as a whole is that these folks cannot see anything except in terms of politics, right? They think of it as almost the administration of this bishop or that pope, and what signals is he sending, and what polls is he reading, and what positions does he think he can stake out? I mean, we have to be charitable enough to think that at least sometimes some people are actually acting like what they were ordained to be, which is pastors. That they're thinking about what the most immediate struggles and questions and puzzles that are facing their people, and they're trying to address those. I think that's a much more accurate reading of what's going on.
Bruni also says, what's happening, and speaking here about what he calls the banishment of gay workers, what's happening amounts to persecution, and it's occurring not because the workers in these situations called any special attention to themselves or made any political fuss. No, they're just loved in a fashion displeasing to many church officials whose concerns with purity are spasmodic and capricious. That's kind of the entire column in a nutshell. What's your response?
Yeah, well, I mean, so all of these cases are cases where there's an element of publicity, where the people are undermining the church's public witness to her vision of marriage and family. And that's the thing. I mean, one thing that just doesn't show up anywhere here in this column, but that's absolutely clear in the church's teaching, is that having a particular set of sexual temptations or attractions doesn't create a problem at the moral level at all. It doesn't make you immoral. It doesn't make anything you're doing sinful. And the people who live by the church's teachings have often been and continue to be great witnesses within the community. They're not excluded because of their feelings. There's a fantastic blog, spiritualfriendship.org, for example, that details the daily lives and efforts of men and women with same-sex attractions who are living proudly by the church's teaching. You know, if they were doing that, I bet Brunei would be pretty inclined to say, oh, well, they're just suppressing themselves. And then if they're, basically he has the much more selective vision of who belongs and of who is within bounds.
Now, is it persecution, and is there a failure also to distinguish here on the part of Brunei and others between what you just mentioned there, the church's teachings, which are not spasmodic or capricious, they're remarkably consistent, and the ability of and willingness of certain church officials to actually abide by those consistent teachings?
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, this is, it's a church of sinners all the way up. There's no, there's a question here about whether people's public, whether the public church's public witness is being undermined. That's what all of these cases should hinge on. I didn't see any evidence in the column that he had produced a case where that wasn't the issue, where somebody was living by the church's teaching, or at least not publicly undermining it, and was still losing their job. And then the other thing, the idea that this is persecution. I mean, you just have to take a simple test case. Imagine there were a case where a Catholic teacher got up in a classroom and said, you know what, I'm all for Ayn Rand's philosophy, that you just got to look out for number one, that there's no such thing as social justice, that everybody just has to maximize their desire for fulfillment. And the church sacked that teacher because that teacher, he or she, was just teaching something contrary to, you know, the Sermon on the Mount. Well, then, of course, Frank Rouhani would be totally fine with it. He would understand that the church has a witness to bear, and she can't do that if people within her own institutions are undermining it. Well, this is just another case of that. The only offense in this case is that Frank Rouhani happens not to agree with the opinion. But that's not a very good argument.
Do you think this is part of a larger attempt to kind of frame the argument, especially with respect to Roman Catholic opponents of same-sex marriage, who tend to be probably the not only more vocal, Godspeed to them, but they also tend to be more visible simply because of the prominence of the Catholic Church in the American landscape. Do you think it's an attempt on the part of the proponents of same-sex marriage to dismiss this out of hand, to say we don't need to be listening to any of this because they're not going to be consistent, they're just meanies?
Yeah, I think that's definitely clear. So we've got to think about this in the broader context, and the broader context is the sexual revolution that's been advancing for the last 50 or 60 years. And folks who are very much in favor of that revolution, which disconnects all of the things that the church understands as being linked, marriage and commitment and sex and cohabitation and family and kids and all the rest of it, they understand that the biggest thing in their way is the Catholic Church, and that they can't win on the level of arguments. They've just got to discredit the church. So you see all kinds of unfairness. You see him hiding and trying to conceal from his readers the truth about the church's distinctions, about her teaching about the dignity of everybody, about the fact that every one of these cases, as far as I can tell, involved people publicly undermining the church's witness. He can't fight at that level, at that honest level. He's got to discredit and demean the church because he and everyone else in favor of this revolution realizes that the church is the main bulwark against them.
You are a young man, and a lot of people would look at your generation and say, well, at least in terms of public opinion, this one's already lost. Young people tend to be tend to be very laissez-faire when it comes to this issue, and maybe even younger Roman Catholics. Is the battle lost among Catholics, or is it lost culturally already?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, one thing a lot of people my age like to say is, you know, it's not like I'm just for anything goes. I'm against abortion, for example. I'm pro-life, but marriage is different. Well, the reason they're able to say that today is that 30 and 40 years ago, when folks in the pro-life movement came face-to-face with Roe v. Wade, they didn't give up. They didn't throw up their hands. They didn't say, we're on the wrong side of history. We might as well give in. All the kids are doing it. They did exactly the opposite. They put their hands to the plow. They said, what are we going to do? Let's build the institutions. Let's make the arguments. Let's give the witness. Let's build the houses to take care of women in distressful situations. And now we're reaping the fruits, and the country's becoming more pro-life, and pro-life state laws are being passed all over the place. So this is not a question about who's, you know, which side of history are we on or something like that. We're going to decide which side of history we're on by what we do, and we may just have to play a long game with it.
Sharif Girgis is a PhD candidate in philosophy at Princeton University, a JD candidate at Yale Law School, co-author of the book, What is Marriage? Man and Woman, a Defense. Sharif, thank you very much for your time, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for October, is actually a novel. We've never done a novel before. It's a novel written by a regular guest here on the program, Katie Schuerman. The novel's called House of Living Stones. I won't give away the plot. I'll just tell you it's all about forgiveness, and that's good enough. It costs only $10.99 plus shipping and handling, And you can find out more about it at our website, issuesetc.org. It's right there on every single page. Look for the book, House of Living Stones by Katie Schuerman, or call Concordia Publishing House and order one. 1-800-325-3040. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series on the small called articles, talking with Pastor Paul McCain of Concordia Publishing House about the Mass. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
Ah, the sounds of rich liturgy and historic Christian worship. What a way to spend a Sunday morning. At Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt, Illinois, you'll find authentic Christianity as you hear the preaching of Christ crucified for the forgiveness of your sins. Come, join us Sunday mornings at 9 and Monday evenings at 7:30, and find out more about Trinity Lutheran Church, Millstadt, Illinois, at trinitymillstadt.org.